Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This episode of Silent Giants is brought to you by Allie. Allie, powered by Verizon Locations, are developed by Verizon, the world's leading technology company, in collaboration with Allie, a membership-only community workspace for creators. Each location is a community curated powered by the emerging technologies and thought leadership of Verizon. With Allie, Verizon is bridging the gap between startup and corporation by helping the community workspace build next-level ecosystems for entrepreneurs.
And now, on to my interview with Chuck Marcus.
I create content. Content could be anything. That could be you drinking water. Content. We'll make it an ad. We'll sell it. We'll figure it out. Every opportunity is content to me. A photographer is just a person with a camera. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, check it out. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Everybody tuning in, you invited. No matter what mood you in, get excited. Everybody love the music, let me tell you how they do it. Whether writer or an agent, let me tell you how they made it. You are now talking to a silent giant. Wanna walk in their shoes, silent giants. Wanna study they move, silent giants. Wanna know what they do, silent giants. Silent giants, y'all.
God bless and welcome to another episode of the Silent Giants podcast, a podcast that highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. To keep up with the latest on the show, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Silent Giants Podcast. To keep up with my life, music, and more, be sure to follow me as well at Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is my dear friend, photographer, and content producer, Chuck Marcus. My friendship with Chuck began when I was an intern at Playclothes Clothing Line, and from the beginning, we began an instant brotherhood. Since that time, way back in 2015, Chuck has emerged as one of the top budding photographers in New York City, working with brands like Adidas, Foot Locker, and Foot Action. He stopped by the podcast, and through our conversation, I was able to learn more about Chuck's early life as a New York City native, how he got into photography. We get personal about the bumps and lessons he's learned along his professional journey, and so much more. I got so much love for this brother, and it's my extreme honor to introduce to you, the photographer, content producer, my friend, the silent giant, Chuck Marcus. Okay, let me get one more mic check from you.
Mic check, 1, 2, 1, 2, Chuck Marcus, one of one, uptown, here we go.
Yeah, I like how you get on the mic and you approach the interview like a rapper.
Hey, man. All right, bruh. I should have been a host.
Well, it's a common trend for folks on the show to get on the mic and they go, yeah. Just holding a microphone brings up the inner rapper in people.
It does. And plus, I realized later in my life, too late in my goddamn life, that I should have been a goddamn radio personality host.
You have a lot of personality.
Should have did that shit.
You know what? You have a lot of opinions and personality.
Yeah, I should have did that shit.
Well, I feel like you have it. It takes a certain type of person to say, I think that's whack. I think that's cool. I think that's dope. I think that's fresh. I think that's stupid. I feel like you're that person.
Definitely. You've known that since we've met.
Yeah, I feel like if I came outside not right, if I had a booger up my nose, you'd be the one friend to be like.
I gotta touch you, bro. Because at the end of the day, people know that we know each other. So just can't you have you out here looking all crazy. Just can't.
Yo, some people will leave you with that booger in the nose.
Yeah, because they don't. That's the people. I just told you this off air, man. People don't care. They're exposing themselves to you. They let you move like that. They don't care. Remember that.
So, everybody, what's going on? This is Chuck Marcus. What's up, Chuck?
Yo, peace, God. Peace to the planet. You know what I'm saying? One of one. We uptown. Harlem world. Yeah.
There are times when I give interviews and there are times when I give conversations. The interview is with somebody I don't know all that well. We don't have like a deep history. And there are some interviews that turn into conversations because we just have such a rapport that it doesn't even feel like, oh, let me introduce you. It's like, oh, everyone knows Chuck. But this is Chuck Marcus, man. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you, man?
Dude, I cannot complain one bit. Life is good. We out here. So to give some context to how me and Chuck first became friends, I met Chuck when I was interning at Playclothes, doing social media. Mm-hmm. And that's where I met Chuck.
Hey, that's about right. That's the truth.
And how long ago was this?
That had to be like 2015. Yeah, like 2015. Yeah, dang, that's crazy. 2015 sounds so far, like so long ago, but it sounds so close.
Well, it's also too, I think it's a New York thing where I was in Virginia for this past weekend. And when I'm in Virginia, everything feels so much slower. Time moves slower.
Yeah, everything
moves slower. I'm like, you know, all of a sudden you're emailing, you're making some calls, and you're like eating some crabs at grandma's house. And you're like, oh, it's only 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, it feels like I would have achieved. It feels like it's noon. Or like this time has moved so much slower, like in other environments. Where I feel like in New York, you're always doing so much. That time moves so much faster.
Yeah, nah, that's true, man. Like, definitely. When I go south, my whole day of calendar, to think that will be all take all day, I'll be done by like 3 o'clock. And be like, right. What the fuck? So yeah, I definitely know that feeling all too well.
So Chuck, you're originally from New York.
Yeah, born and raised, man. I grew uptown, you know, grew up between Harlem and the Bronx. You know, I've done it all here. All right.
You definitely feel like an uptown person to me. When they coming from Virginia, I didn't really understand the dynamics between Brooklyn cats and Harlem cats.
There's definitely a difference.
It's a major difference. It's like coming from two different states.
Yeah, it is. It's a difference from talking. It's a difference from moving. It's a difference from appearance.
Yes.
There's a difference from just wearing the same shoe differently. Like, there's total difference in a lot of things between uptown, Brooklyn, Queens, you know, even Staten Island. Like, it's just a difference. It's definitely, you can tell. Like, I can step into a room, but like, he's from Brooklyn. He's from Harlem. He's from the Bronx. He's from Queens. So we can tell easily.
Describe to me the your upbringing in Harlem.
Mine's was pretty decent. I grew up in a one-parent household. Shout out to my mom's old head. She lit. Just me and my two siblings. Mine's was good. Like I said, I was an active kid. So my mom's kept me active, so I never touched the streets. So I danced my entire life. Transitioned that. My brother played ball. And then, like, you know, I did everything. I played the piano, violin, all that stuff. But none of those stuff stuck. Dancing didn't even stick. And then, you know, my dad's a photographer. So I grew up around him. And the camera, I wouldn't say it stuck, but it was something that I always had. Always had it. Like, any type of camera. And it was just a thing I liked to do in the beginning. Never knew, fast forwarding all my life, I would be a photographer. You know what I'm saying? People I grew up with wouldn't even believe that, because I danced and I loved dance so much at that time that it was just like, wait, this is what you do for a living? You don't dance anymore? So yeah, that's what it is.
Well, there's two things that I've noticed that I ask everyone on the show. It's important to me to point out that people are not just these unicorn, rare, outlier people. Successful people and great people are nurtured. Success is nurtured. And those two things come from your parents and geography. And so most people, if you were to ask, you know, I interviewed DJ Clark Kent on the latest podcast that came out.
Mm-hmm.
His mom's an opera singer.
Yeah.
So that gives him a legs up advantage on music.
Yeah, definitely.
And a different genre of music, a different aspect of looking at music. But he's also was raised in New York City in an era where hip hop was budding.
Yeah.
And it was becoming
something.
Something, yeah. You know, and he was just right there to soak up all that culture. But he has that culture in the streets. He has that culture at home. Is that something that you can describe for yourself as well?
Yeah, nah. I think my dad's style of photography that people don't understand, he's a street photographer, like super street photographer too. Like not like these cool kids today who like got the digital. Like, nah, he's like a street photographer who doesn't even look through the viewfinder. Like, he's just pressing a button and hoping that whatever he saw with his natural eye comes out. And I used to just see his stuff around. And I was like, yo, this is cool. Like, this is cool. You know, and I never attempted it. But I was, like I said, I always kept a camera. My camera for me was mostly documenting my friends and experiences. And I know, like, when I got to college, I attempted to go to college to be the camera guy.
You went to FAMU?
Yeah, Florida A&M University.
Yes, HBCUs all day.
Yeah.
I went to Virginia State my freshman year.
All right, shout out to you, VSU in the building.
Yeah, go Trojans.
Yeah.
What drove you to make the move out of New York? One thing is that New York City is kind of college in itself as far as there being the opportunities always around you. Versus maybe it's a little bit different when you step outside of the New York market or LA market or Atlanta market, a major market, where opportunities are just kind of around when you're here. What drove you to make the move down south for college?
My sister went to Clark Atlanta University. And me and my, like, I was my sister's son, in a sense, because my sister's 11 years older than me. So anywhere she went, she took me. And I experienced that early on. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to a black school. Like, if I'm going to go to college, I'm going to a black school. Now, I couldn't tell you what black school I was going to, but I just knew I was going to one.
Why was that important to you?
Because, man, it's just like, just seeing the culture there and understanding it was kind of like home. Also like, realizing that now as an adult, but like, not realizing like, the people that my sister were around now are her core friends from college. You know what I'm saying? And she still has those relationships 30 years later. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're all involved in each other's lives. All their, like, they're God kids and all this other stuff. And it's just, it's crazy how all of them met in college and figured it out. And I just knew that I wanted to go to an HBCU. Like I said, I couldn't tell you which one. I just knew I wanted to go to one because my sister went to one. And I just saw some things from there. And I was like, yeah, I got to go. Like, I got to go to this. And actually, you know what? Another thing that was good for me too, why I wanted to go to HBCU is because I only went to school with black and Latino kids. So I never went to school with all black kids. And I never went to school with all kids who just wanted to be in school. Like I experienced that when I got to college. Like everybody who looks like me and these kids were like the top of their fucking class. Like this nigga was the valedictorian. He was the cool kid on campus. He was the homecoming king. He was the SGA president. And I'm coming from New York, not having any of that, just me being from New York. And I'm like, yo, I'm from New York. Like, and that was a cool factor for me off the strength. Like, oh, you from New York? You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, all the other things fall into place. But like, I knew I wanted to be in an environment where people who look like me, who wanted to excel. You know, I feel like growing up, I had those environments, but it was always like, I always had like a homie who was black or a homie who was Spanish. Like it was always a weird dynamic.
What was your major at FAMU?
Broadcast journalism.
Interesting. Mine was too at VCU.
Yeah.
Why broadcast journalism? Was it in the realm of being an on-air personality?
That was the goal, man. I wanted to be on TV, be a news anchor, all that good stuff. But I realized I wasn't built for the time. Like, I didn't realize that it took you 10, maybe 5 to 7 years before you even get on television. I was like, wait.
Oh, yeah, dude. They put you in some shitty market.
I was like, yo, this doesn't happen when you get out of college? So, you know, I just think for me personally, like, and it's not a regret, but I always look like, damn, I wish I would have stuck at that. But, like, I got out that game early. I was like, nah, I'm good off this. Like, you're not going to, like, make me work this long. And not realizing, like, it's funny now because a lot of my classmates, they're on television in smaller markets, but they're on television. You know what I'm saying? Not realizing, like, the years that you do for your internships and all that shit is grandfathered in with you for the rest of your life. So you could graduate 2011, but if you had 3 years of internships, that's 3 years of experience already added to whatever you're going to get. You know, so like that pushed them through the market because a lot of my friends, like we all intern everywhere and we like excelled in the internship. So it was just like, so yeah.
But,
yeah.
What was the light bulb moment for you to get into photography and picking up the family trade?
Oh, perfect story. So a lot of people know I used to work at Atlantic Records as an A&R assistant back in the day and worked on this project with an artist. And I just remember us hiring this photographer. I think we paid him like 5 bands and he took like 30 pictures and like they were just shitty. Like they were so shitty. And I was sitting there like, yo, bro, you hired him to do this? You could have hired me to do this. And y'all could have got it for way cheaper. And instantly right then and there, light bulb hit me like, yo, I need to quit my job.
Cause wait, but where did your college experience lead you to becoming an A&R at Atlantic?
Graduated undergrad, had a good friend who interned at Complex. Basically killed his internship or reached back out to him like, hey, you know anybody who does marketing? We're looking for some people. And he's like, oh, yeah, you should reach out to my good friend, Chuck Marcus. Kid I went to college with from New York. Like, real cool. Link with him. End up doing an internship with them for, like, a few months. End up started working with them for a while. But I worked on the marketing side, so I wasn't on the cool kid side with the editorial guys and all that other shit. Remember my homeboy telling me, like, yo, when you get in here, treat it like fam, you take over the building. So I inserted myself to the editorial side, got cool with the marketing guy at the time who was the music director at the time who was Rob Kenner. And I just hung out with him. He would go to these music events and all this other stuff. And I realized, like, there was a ceiling for me at Complex. So I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I knew I always wanted to work in music. Reached back to my source, my lifeline, the person who sent me to fam, my guidance counselor from high school. I was like, hey, I got a job, but I want to try something else. She's like, which one does I want to work in the music industry? Lucked up, her husband was an A&R at fucking Atlantic Records. And she's like, yeah, let me see if he can get you some. Took about 4 to 5 months. Didn't work out because at that time they needed someone who's in school. And I was like, bro, I'm graduating. I'm not going back to school. Like, I'm done. So, like, you had to figure it out. Next thing you know, they end up, like, telling him, like, yo, you need an assistant. And he was like, all right, cool. I got the perfect assistant. Hire him. And he got me hired as his assistant. And, like, that's how I got into it. And I kind of did it the A&R side from a production side. So a lot of beats, songwriters, working with those kind of guys. And it was cool. I realized instantly it wasn't for me because I love music as a consumer. And I had to treat it as a job. So there were things that I like, pardon me, that I realized were like, oh, like, to you, this is fire, but to them, that's not a dollar sign. And it didn't work out for me. So, you know, and then, like, I had that experience with the photographer. And I was like, nah, this is God telling me, yo, you got to go get it. So end up just calling my dad. Like, I didn't quit yet. Call my dad first. I was like, yo, bro, I need a camera. I'm about to do this photography shit. He's like, guy, how much you got? I was like, yo, I got like 2 bands. He's like, all right, cool. He said, I'm going to throw you an extra band. We're going to get you a camera. Got me a camera, figured it out.
What was their first camera?
It was a Nikon D3200 crop sensor. I think I paid like $500 for that joint.
Okay.
Had like 2 lenses, like a 55 to 200 in a factory joint. Like the 18 to 55 3.5 joint trash. But I got busy with that camera for like a year and a half. And I ended up booking like my first gig with it. One of my college friends ended up getting engaged and they're like, yo, we want you to shoot our engagement photos. And they lived in New York at the time. So we went down to Times Square, shot this beautiful photo in the middle of Times Square, in the middle of the street from like ground level. And that started my friends to hire me. Like, oh shit. Oh, you did this? Oh yeah, we got to hire you. You know, in that transition into like getting gigs and then learning stuff. And then I realized, like, you know, there's seasons to this thing, right? Like, you're very hot in the summer, fall and winter. It can slow down if you don't structure yourself correctly.
Well, I always say that New York is like a college town. No one's really from New York, right? You have some people who are from here. Some people are from the college town, right? But you have 80% are here for college, which college here in New York is work.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's crazy. That's a great analogy, the way to look at it. The transplants are like outpopulation, the natives in a sense.
Yes. Because
as far as work wise, like as far as like corporate shit here, it's mostly transplants, not many natives. Natives are doing usually like, what do you call that? Government jobs.
Yeah. Like the things that make the city run. Yeah. but like the way I look at it is you have, after Labor Day, right? Always after the first Sunday of the NFL season, people are back. So that Monday after the first Sunday of the NFL season, the city's alive again. Mm-hmm. And people are here working from September, October, November up until Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. right? After Thanksgiving, they go on their break. They go back to their hometown. They leave the college town. Mm-hmm. They come back for another 2 weeks to finish up the semester. in December. But then you have Christmas, and then you have New Year's, and then people really won't, they may go on vacation during the winter, and they won't really come back until January 15th. And then after January 15th, people come back, but then your opportunities are dormant. I had a friend of mine who, they raised a bunch of money for their record label. They raised like $10 million. And it was May. And I was like, well, of course you got the money in May. No one's giving away $10 million in February. Like when you're cold and miserable. So yes, all your opportunities freeze up in the wintertime. And then after, I would say April. After April, people start coming out.
So I think that's that's a great way to look at it. I don't think that's true, though. So I look at it like this. The summertime is for me to get active. Like to get active, be in the street, be visible, meet as many people as possible.
Now right? It's network busy.
Right? So yes. I think that's how I look at the summer. And then the winter is how, at least for now, like early in the game I didn't do this, but now, like the winter for me, it's like everybody get met in the summer. We need to be building projects, campaigns, any type of work for the winter. Like so right now, like I got projects coming up in October, I got projects coming in November, December in New York right now, but I'm building it now because like I met these people in the summer. We've kicked it all summer. We've had great times. We even been out of town with each other, like going to different festivals. Like, oh shit, yo, I see you in the city, da 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 da. So you know all those things. But I think the winter, it doesn't dry up, and like that's what I'm trying to tell you. So like for me, coming into my career profession, I had to learn that like, all right, the winter is a lot different. It's a different stilo. Like it's cold. No one wants to shoot outside. Two, I don't want to shoot outside because it's fucking cold. Like, I don't want to deal with that. The elements are here. It's just a lot of things going on. And I had to find different avenues. And I had a homeboy who was already doing this prior to me. And he put me on game. He was like, yo, bro, you should try to teach photography in the winter. So this way you act. He said, you teach in the winter. It's a steady paycheck. You don't got to worry about checks. He said, you're still doing photography. And then you got the summer off. So you could get busy all summer. So I started that for a little bit. And that was cool. But then, like, yeah, it's just different. I had to pick up different hustles, you know, and like now as I got older, it's like, you know, when it's cold here, I just fly to a warmer climate. Like, yo, I'm gonna just go here for a few months, do some work there, come back.
So a lot of the number one reason why I have you on the show is because I've dealt with a lot of talent giants who are legacy folks. So they were around in the era of Prince. They were people who were around before the age of digital. Mm-hmm. How have you found the market to be in digital? How have you been able to excel in the digital landscape?
Well, I mean, it goes back to that thing you talk about with Clark Kent, like growing up with hip hop. Like I'm becoming an adult with digital content. Like I remember when, like working at Complex, like they didn't have the position digital.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Marketing manager that didn't exist. Like they had to create that. Like I remember that. Like that's how I got my job. Like the person who I interned for, they created the position for her. And she was like, oh, I need a team. And like she hired me. And that's how I ended up getting my job. Because at that time, like they didn't have that. Like the internet was booming, but like having a platform for a major publication at that time was something new. And they were trying to figure it out. And that's, so if you remember those days, like early Complex days, a lot of clickbait things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we were trying to
list.
Drive. Yeah.
And top five, yeah, favorite.
Yeah. All of those, yeah, good things. Because we were trying to drive traffic, but we're also trying to figure out, you know, what is this digital thing that everyone's trying to create? So for me to live in it, it's cool to see it evolve. It's cool to see me adapt to it very quickly. you've worked with me a lot. You know, people call me a photographer. I'm a content producer. I create content.
Now, what is the difference between a content producer versus a photographer versus videographer? Explain that to people.
I mean, for me, like, I create content. Content can be anything. That could be you drinking water. Content. We'll make it an ad. We'll sell it. We'll figure it out. Every opportunity is content to me. A photographer is just a person with a camera. That's how I look at it. You know, anyone could be a photographer. I give you a camera, you're a photographer. But what can you do with that camera? Can you create something? You know, and I say content producer because part of me, like, I create a lot of things that I do. So, like, when we worked at Playclothes, like, all those lookbooks, like, you see me create them from scratch.
Right.
Here's the idea that we want to do. All right, cool. I'm going to create a campaign out of scratch. You give me the idea. I'm going to tell you how it should look visually, how the story should read. And then next thing you know, they implemented the models. Okay, cool. We're going to use this person because we want them in this campaign. We're going to use this person because we want to use them in this concept. You know, so that's where at least for me, the producing part comes in, because I'm producing your idea. I'm making your idea come to life, right? Something that's in your head that you were able to put on paper. And now you can see that thing that you put on paper come visual. And it's like something you can touch and you're like, oh yeah, like we created this. So like that's how, I think that's the difference, at least for me. Like a photographer is just a person with a device, a camera. Not even a device, just a camera, you know? Because that's the thing too. Like, you know, cameras now are like, they're like accessories.
It's funny, I walk around New York City, people do wear like their camera like it's a chain.
Yeah.
Well, to me, the lines are blurred between being a content producer and art direction.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give some clarification on the two?
So art direction is just the person who's like giving you literally like, this is the direction. So Chris was the art director, and
Goins. Shout out to Chris Goins, yeah. The man.
Yeah. So like Chris was the art director in that situation. Like he like basically say, yo, I want to do something with this towel, make something out of this towel. And I came back and was like, all right, cool. We're going to tell the story with this towel this way. We'll have a picture with the person holding the towel. We'll have a picture with the towel right around the person's shoulder. We'll have the picture with the towel wiping the sweat. Like, that's the story. But he just gave me the art direction. Like, I need you to do something with this.
Got it.
You know, and we told the story that way. I think that's the difference. At least that's how I interpret it, you know?
So it's almost like the art director. And it's something that I know for the folks on the show who are learning more about the industry, the art director is more of the coach. They draw up the play. Like, look, I want you to score a three-pointer here with 8 seconds left. And then the player is the content producer, yeah, to execute the shot.
Execute it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when we met, we were at Playclothes. But where did you leave and go after Playclothes?
I went and did my own thing. And that's just because Playclothes gave me so much leverage. You know, I had so much access to people in there. And like I told you, when I was at Complex, they told me, I'll take care of the room. So anytime somebody came through Playclothes, I was networking and building. And I kind of went and did my own thing. I started working with Sirius for a little bit, doing some projects over there. Then I went back and did some things with Kif for a little bit.
To me, too, you also kind of represent the millennial entrepreneur in the sense that back in the day, like the same friend I was talking to, and I was like, look, in 10 years, you won't have a job, because even though you're making things or being mass distributed, they don't have your name on it, right? And I think the way that the internet is going is in a very micro media, micro brand era that we're living in. And I think you've been able to capitalize on that as well. When was there a light bulb moment for you as far as creating your own brand? It's not just photography. So many times, there's so many amazing basketball players. There's only one Jordan. And the reason why is a lot of it to do with the marketing, is understanding marketing.
Okay. I see where you're going here.
Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah,
Magic Johnson was amazing.
Yeah, no, nah, you're
Larry
right.
Bird was amazing.
Yeah, but because
Dr. J was amazing.
But Jordan had a brand of sneaker, and you know, I see that. That makes sense.
He was kind of the first like macro micro brand.
Yeah, no, that's very accurate.
What was that light bulb moment for you? Because where did that come from? Where did that idea come from of saying, so, hey?
Honestly, everything is stolen. I stole it. Shout out to my man, Ishmael, calligraphist. I stole it. I seen this kid, good friend of mine, early on. I said, yo, this kid is popping. I saw his name so much, I never knew who he was. But I just saw his name. Everyone, he had pictures from everyone. Celebrity, non-celebrity, the local person, my friend. Like, yo, this kid took a picture. Who is this kid? And I just took the same format and made it my own. But the difference between me and him, he had to watermark his pictures because people wasn't giving his photo credit. For me, I emphasized, like, yo, give me photo credit. And then I always threw my own, before there were filters and all that stuff, I had my own style of editing. And I always threw that characteristic on it. So when you see it, like now when you see pictures of mine, you know, like, oh, yeah, Chuck Marcus took that. Like, I could tell by the tones. I could tell by the coloring. Like, it's a Chuck Marcus photo, you know. But I took it from him and just kind of, like, added my twist to it, you know. Because I've never been big on watermarking, you know. This is not my thing. Just, if you give me photo credit, the photo credit's going to trickle. Because it's a thing. Like, oh, yeah, this person took it. This person took it. So if Play Close posted it, you saw it, you liked the picture, you're going to post it and tag me. You saw it, like, your friend's going to post it and tag me. And it's a trickle effect, you know. Where in his case, I mean, he has it great too, because he has a double sword. Like, he has his watermark on it. So before you even see the caption, you could see that, oh, calligraphers took this. You know what I'm saying? So it's that.
Do you think that watermarking at all cheapens the value of the photo?
I don't think it cheapens the value. I think depending on what your watermark is, mine's my logo. Like, I'm never going to just put words. You know, some people do words because it's simplistic.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's not so distracting. I know my logo's a tad bit distracting because it's green and it's my name. It's like a stamp. I already know it's distracting, so I just don't even use it that much. But I want that logo to be identified too. So it's like, if I'm on something, they see the name Chuck. Like, you don't even got to think, like, who's Chuck. Like, you just know, oh, yeah, that's Chuck Marcus. Like, we know.
Let's say, like, back in the early 90s with hip hop, which is considered the golden era of hip hop, but it was also a very regional.
Yeah, definitely regional.
Perspective, right? Yeah. Like, every rapper came from New York City. New York City is the origin of hip hop. And so you weren't really dope if you didn't really come from New York. And you may have had a little scene somewhere else. LA definitely was doing its thing. But if you weren't really in New York or LA, you weren't really being looked at. But with the wave of the internet, things have really opened up. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed some photographers who come from the golden era of photography who were, you know, on tour with major acts like Bob Marley or Michael Jackson. But because there was no Instagram at that time, their work really wasn't really seen. They weren't celebrated the way that folks maybe are now. How has Instagram and digital technology played a role in exposure for you individually?
I mean, it definitely gives me longevity in the sense where, like, if I stopped taking pictures today, people would know, like, oh, he was a photographer at one point because the evidence is there. Mm. And it's the internet. Nothing on the internet dies. You can always find it. There's always a way to find it. So, like, it gives you longevity in that sense. But it's also like, yo, bro, the internet is the best thing created. Like, it is. And if you use it correctly, like, you can go far. Like, you can go really far with it. I'm not going to lie. I'm piss poor when it comes to the internet as far as social media. And that's just because I just don't care. I value real life relationships. I don't have time just to, like, post my day and all that other stuff. I try to do it. I'm trying to get better with it. But I'm more about the genuine interaction. Like, if I meet you, let's rap, let's build. Like, I want your phone number. I don't want your social media. Like, text me. Like, call me. I'm going to talk to you. Like, I'm more of a call person, too. Like, and people who get to know me, they know I don't really do texting. Like, I'm going to call you. Like, yo, what's up? You all right? You good? All right. You know? Right. So, I mean, like, for me, that's what it is. But social media is definitely, it's a way to get out there. I try to tell, like, especially, like, the younger kids who always, like, come out, like, yo, how can I do it? I'm like, bro, if you come from this era, like, you're already social media inclined. Like, you do this 24/7. Just apply that to photography. If you're going to take pictures, always post your pictures. Always, like, just drop the content. Give it away. Like, that's another thing, too, that photographers do. They tend to hold shit. Like, let that shit live. Like, give it away. Some of the best Instagram photographers are lit because they gave away content. They just posting crazy.
Just consistently.
Yeah, 4 times a day, 3 times a day. They just posting pictures. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are the guys who, like, in the early days of Instagram, like, not now. Like, now everyone has Ks. But we're talking about, like, 2012, 2013. Those guys, like, who now are, like, 100,000 followers. You know what I'm saying? And they photographers. Those guys in 2012, 2013 were at, like, 20,000 followers. Because they were dropping 4 to 5 pictures a day. Just giving you content here. You can have it, you know? And I always say, I joined that wave late. You know, it's my fault though, because I just didn't want to do that. I didn't want to stuff constantly in your face. And also too, like, I just wanted to save my pictures. And I was like, yo, what am I holding this for?
Well, I think there's, I think it's a double-edged sword. And correct me if you think differently, where you can get caught up in the numbers. It's almost like a person who has a number one song on the Billboard charts. But if your catalog sucks, does it really matter? You just have a number one song and you're going to hear today or gone tomorrow versus the aspect of quality and just producing quality, because Instagram is kind of becoming the where I don't get people's numbers. I get your Instagram, because your Instagram is to me your business card. Mm-hmm. It lets me know what you're working on. Like, yeah. And it's not even a matter if you have 300 followers or 3 million followers. It's about, oh, this is what you're about. The mutual connections. Like, who are our mutual friends? Or, you know, what are you working on currently? That's what I'm most impressed by. Do you feel the same way? Is that, like, more of a focus for you?
Yeah. Because it helps me align with the right people, right? Doing things with different companies and stuff, it just happened that way. And it's all through Instagram, you know? You're following me, but I like Clark Kent's picture, and then Clark Kent commented on my picture, and now that's on your explore page. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's like, oh, this kid knows Clark Kent. I've been seeing him so many times, didn't know. And then trying to get to Clark Kent, you know? So now Instagram has created this social friendship, and I say social meaning social media, because it's not really like a face-to-face thing. We're just interacting so much through social media, you know what I'm saying? And then, like, it's a thing. But I think we definitely get lost in the numbers.
Are you allowed to speak with some of the brands you're currently working with?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing work with a few brands. I'm working with Adidas, working with Foot Locker and Foot Action.
What is the best way to navigate working with big brands? Have you made a mistake working with big brands before? Like, what is the most common mistake that you've made?
I undercharge. That was my mistake.
How do you know what to charge?
By seeing my friends who do exactly what I do, and they're telling me, yo, I'm making this. And I'm like, you made that?
So asking directly?
Literally. But these are my friends, right?
Like, right.
These are not like some random people. Like, these are people I've built relationships with. But I'm like, yo, they paid you that? And he's like, yeah. He says, yo, they can pay you that. Like, you just got to ask for it. And like, you know, it's been a year for me. This year is like, yo, ask exactly for what you want. No matter the outcome. They tell you, no, it's okay. Someone's going to pay for it. You know? And like, that's literally what's happening. But yeah, I think that's the difference for me. And then also too, like, really building a relationship with the brand too. Like, before, I used to just work for a brand, do the project, wait for them to hit me back. Now I'm like doing a project, coming back to the office, spending some time in the office, talking to some more people in the office, you know, and like getting myself acclimated with the people around.
With every person on the show, I typically ask them the same question to close out the interview, which every person has achieved or pursuing a certain level of greatness. So many times in life, we look on television and we go, wow, that person's lit. Or that person's popping. Or like, if that performance was dope, Beyonce's performance was ill, I want to be like Beyonce. But we don't know the sacrifices that Beyonce has given up to pursue that level of greatness, right? There's only 24 hours in a day. What have you given up in your pursuit of greatness?
That's a great question. I gave up stability. I say stability because, like we talked about earlier, like, I could have just did the broadcast journalism, cushy job, figure it out. But I follow, like, my, like, true passion. And, like, in doing that, like, some jobs were consistent, and then some jobs I was a little rocky. And then some years I was just like, yo, dogs, how did I make it through this year? You know, like, how? You know, by the grace of God, thank God for all the stuff he's done. But it's just like, the stability is what I gave up to chase my dream. And now my stability, like right now, I'm currently at a stable like space. Like I'm stable in my career, in what I'm doing, and I'm doing something I love. So it's not work, it's fun. You know, I enjoy all the things I'm doing, you know, things of that nature.
Hmm. But Chuck Marcus, oh wait, how do we find you on Instagram?
The typical question.
Hey, you know.
All social channels is Chuck Marcus, C-H-U-C-K-M-A-R-C-U-S. On Instagram, look for the green dot. Yeah, that's all I could tell you. Everything else is my picture. ChuckMarcus.com. We out here. Come show love. If you want to rap, you want book a shoot, I'm very cheap, as I like to say. Feel free to email me. All those information is there. Thank you, Corey, for putting me on the Silent Giants.
No, you know what? Let me say first, you know, there, as I see Chuck today, I was going through some things here in New York, and I was just like, rah. And Chuck, you've always been a brother. There's people that you are, you know, your colleagues with or your associates. And then people are like, you know what, man, you're a brother. When I'm having a bad day, I'm like, fam, like, I'm going to get it together for this interview. Let me vent for a second. But you've always been a very humble guy, a very hardworking guy, a very passionate guy, and just a very real person. And I appreciate you. And I encourage everyone to work with Chuck because of that. You're not working with someone with talent. You work with someone with talent who's also real at the same time.
Oh, man, appreciate that. Yo, those are true words.
Look, I always say it's good to work with people that you would invite to your wedding.
Oh, dang. That's amazing. Because niggas don't get invited to the wedding. Yo, that's so amazing.
If you could work with people that you would invite to your wedding, you're really hitting the sweet spot.
Yo, you need to tweet that. That's phenomenal.
Hey, Chuck Marcus, I love you, brother. Everybody, check him out. We out of here.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of the Silent Giants podcast and to our special guest, Chuck Marcus. I'll have the links to Chuck's website and social media in the description of this episode. This episode was mixed by Mark Bird. And lastly, before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other show, OPP. Other People's Podcast is the TRL of podcasting. Every week, I interview America's top podcasters and learn more about them and the dope shows they created. I provide the link for you in the description of this episode. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Pod bless. Till next time.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.